question, give the Motor Mouths a call at 516-572-7440.
All right, welcome back to Motor Mouth Radio. We are not taking those calls right now because we have on the line noted author, noted correspondent, noted author, writer, and a whole bunch of good stuff, television, all medias, all sorts of media. Steve Magante is with us. How are you, sir?
Doing great, Ray.
Well, that was Chris, Steve. This is Ray over here, but that's okay. You can't see us, so that's quite all right. We get confused a lot, but we're confused all the time, but that's beside the point.
Right. They go, which one is Click and which one is Clack? Right. That's usually what they say.
Well, Steve, I want to thank you for coming on after your run on Barrett Jackson doing the commentating. I was watching you and loving every minute of it. How do you decompress after that event? Because that's you work hard, man.
Well, you know, it's a good point. It's 40 hours of live television.
Wow.
And what I usually do is I come back, I sleep for a day. I really do. I just make it a point to lie down and relax. But it is, it's a grinder, but it only feels like maybe 41 hours when you're doing it.
Yeah, it only feels like 80.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, you're my favorite commentator, and a lot of our friends feel the same way. You add so much technicality, but in a common guy way that, you know, I feel like I either should know what you're talking about or I do know after you say it. It's an excellent delivery, and I compliment you highly on that. A very good job.
Oh, thanks very much. You know, we get 4 minutes roughly per car before the hammer is sold or whatever happens next. And the cars deserve more than a guess, you know. And I've seen a lot of, I used to watch Alan DeCadenay, who I love, respect, and appreciate. I would sit there in my home in El Monte, California, 15 years ago, and I would watch Alan describe a Boss 429 as quite a lump. Quite a lump.
Right.
And I'm saying, well, hold on, that one is the magnesium rocker covers, not the aluminum ones. It's an early, you know, engine. It's an A20 motor, and he just called a lump. So, you know, I love him, but the thing is, he's not really that tuned into American Muscle, right? And that's kind of why he's not doing it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But he's doing fantastic things. Alan's a very, very good. In fact, his show Victory by Design was a thrill to watch. He'd be driving along, and Nick Mason, I think the Pink Floyd guy, in like a $2 million Ferrari GTO at 140 miles an hour, he'd be describing, you know, how the steering wheel feels. You know, so he has his skill set. There's no doubt about that.
Sure.
But anyway, with that said, you know, I wanted to make sure that whatever I said about the cars wasn't a guess and wasn't wrong.
Oh, yeah.
And so I prepare. I do have a notepad. I always have my hand. And someday I guess I'll evolve a third hand, hopefully, because I got the mic in one, I got my talkback switch in the other one, and then there's the notepad.
Right.
But I do make notes. Each car gets a little thing, just a talking point, something to say. Because, you know, if the GTO pulls up, for instance, you guys love those. And I love your 65, by the way.
Thank you, Steve.
Yeah, check that one out. And but anyway, car comes up. It's got a 3-speed manual, right? And if you don't see it or walk up to it, you won't see the shift ball with the 1, 2, 3 on it. But if you go forward and you say, hey, I better find out what these cars are. Oh, this one's a 3-speed. So when it comes up, I'll know to say there were two versions, a Saginaw and a Ford-built 3-speed, depending on which one of those two you got.
Right.
The Saginaw came on the column, et cetera, et cetera. You know, so that way I can get right to the point rather than say, oh, man, I didn't see that when a car gets sold, you know. So anyway, it's just a little preparation goes a long way.
Steve, how do you prepare? What do you have, like a set regimen?
Yeah, well, what I do is the week before the auctions, I buy this. If we have the Florida, Reno, or Vegas shows, they're 3-day events, so I buy 3 notepads at my local Walmart, whatever it is. They're small. They got to be top-hinged so I can fit my pocket, and they flip easily, right? Double page, right?
Right.
So anyway, or if it's the Vegas show, we have 6 notepads to buy. That's Scottsdale. That's the monster.
Wow.
But I buy those notepads anyway. So I sit down with a docket list. We know that we're on the air from a certain time, begin, end. And there you have it. Right between those hours, we know that lot number 303 through 572 are going to be on. So I then go to the online docket, BarrettJackson.com, and I just look at each car. And the vendor consignor description only tells you so much. So sometimes you'll either work with what he says or just come up with something about each car. And the punchline is 40% of what I prepare doesn't get used because we go to break.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So you just have to prepare for everything because you can't predict when the breaks happen. So you just make sure. And after 10 years of this, I really don't need the notes anymore, but I still do it. I still do it because you don't want to start repeating the same stuff.
You know, Steve.
I do that kind of. I once in a while say the same thing.
We're in our 13th year now doing this show, and I have a page of notes to talk to you about, and I probably won't get through a third of it. But one of my favorite things you said, and it's from last year's auction, I made a note because I was hoping to follow up with you on it. We never got together. Was you were talking about some car, and you talked about how much dead cat storage was above the rear wheels.
Yeah, right.
You remember that?
Dead cat space, yeah.
I was like, geez, that's brilliant. But I was going to say now, for all of the listeners who want to know, if you want to do research like Steve, get this book. I'm holding it up to Chris.
Yes, exactly.
Steve Mignante's 1001 Muscle Car Facts.
Wow.
This thing is so packed with minutia. And this is from our friends CarTech. We deal with them all the time. Go to CarTechBooks.com and just look up Steve Mignante. You'll find that book.
It's funny, Steve, because I'm the same way. I'm very similar. No, I don't hold the candle. I don't hold the candle to you. I'm sure of that. You have way more knowledge packed in that head than I have in mine. But I love the minutia. I love who designed the cars. What was how the designs happened and all those little parts and pieces that go together and the stories that go along with it.
I
got to read that book.
Steve knows who designed the intake manifold,
right?
And what plant the shifter came from, which is what the real car guys want to hear. Yeah, you know, which is great.
Huh?
And dead cat storage.
And
which,
totally, nowhere dead cat storage is.
Now, I just have to back up. I am a very big cat fan. I have three cats at home, big cat lovers. Steve, I know you are too. Do you have any new shop cats at home? I know you had a few out in California.
Yeah, well, you know, actually, no shop cats. And yes, I'm a lover of cats. Let me explain first, though. It's dead cat space, and it's a term I was reading. I think it was Automobile Magazine. Robert Cumberford has a column designed by Cumberford on Design, something like that. Every month, he dissects a vehicle, and he says that in his office at GM in 1958-9, whatever it was, the designers would call space between the top of the tire and where the fender lip begins was dead cat space, because cats would sleep on top of the tire, and then as the car began to roll, if they weren't that bright, they maybe get squished, right?
Right.
Well, he said less is better. I like dead cat space. Funny cars, altered wheelbase cars, you want to be able to stack three cats on the front, at least one in the back. That's me.
Yeah.
But anyway, but that's what dead cat space refers to. But yes, I have cats. Yes, I do. There are three of them here, four of them, actually.
Yeah.
One of them's mine, Cookies, who is actually Gray Baskerville's grand kitten.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, when I was in Hot Rod magazine. Yeah, he had, I call it grand. And he loved critters. He had a beautiful home in South Pasadena. His wife, a school teacher, and to Pasadena is kind of a busy place. If you've not been there, it's weird. But you drive down, I think South Oaks or something like that. You drive down this avenue and you pull into this grotto of trees and this big beautiful home that sort of has elevated space and a walk around perimeter. That's Gray's palace, if you will, and cats, kittens everywhere, and just uncontrolled reproduction, right?
Yeah.
So he had this one kitten that he brought in, and he says, you want her babies? Yeah, sure. So Snowball was the cat, and that was the cat that Gray gave me, and Snowball had a litter. And this is Cookies, who is from that litter. Now, every time those kitties had babies, you know, we'd try to get them spayed or neutered, but I had no problem giving away Gray's offspring, so to speak, to people at Hot Rod. They would always take the kitties at Peterson Building. It was kind of a neat thing. But so that's one. That's mine, Cookies. I brought her here in a car 7 years ago.
Wow.
See, I lived in California for 16 years, moved back here to Massachusetts about 7 years ago. But Cookies made the trip with me in a car. And anyway, there's three other kitties. My girlfriend, Heather, has three cats, and they're here presently, and so there's a four cat family we have here. But yeah, I love cats too. So dead cat space is an affectionate term. I don't like the killer herd cat.
Steve, at my house we started using a mobile vet, and the guy's actually a car guy. We talk more about cars than we do about because I can't bring my one cat even to the closest vet in the car. He freaks out. So I have a guy come to my house with his mobile. He came last week with this kind of mobile home, and he has an operator. You know,
Steve, just a sidebar, do the cats provide any function in the shop at all?
These mice. I guess that's about it. Mice.
Just right. Mice, right? Yeah, figured, you know, stir paint.
I tell you what,
anything.
My cats, if I leave the ham sandwich out, they're eating that too.
I was going to say, it's a living California duster.
That's right. Yeah.
So let me get back to cars here. Steve, I thought of a question while you were commentating last week, and I'm just curious, and stick with me on this. Do you prefer, because people may not know, a ratty resto mod or a clean rat rod? For, you know, just personal taste.
Isn't that the same car?
Well, let's see. They kind of fall into the same department.
A little bit.
In a way, in a sense. I mean, where unfinished is finished. And I like them both. You know, my thing is I'm not lazy in any way, shape, or form, but I've never, ever been one to polish and wax cars. It's the most boring thing. For me. Just for me, right?
That's for me, too.
Yeah, so I don't have that gene, I'm happy to say. But, you know, for me, I see my cars shine from the inside out with, you know, meticulous machine work on the crankshafts and then going forward from there all the way out, you know. And they're not pretty to look at, but they run hard. That's my mm-hmm. excuse. So I appreciate cars of every stripe, although I don't have much use personally for like a numbers-matching restored Superbird or something like that. I love them, but you get so afraid to drive them. And plus, they become so monetized that they're not even vehicles anymore. They just kind of become, it's kind of too bad because the car somewhere inside, it's screaming to have somebody do a burnout in it.
Right.
And, you know, do a donut, just start doing donuts, manic donuts for an hour, you know, until the oil pan gets sucked dry. And, you know, but anyway, but it's not going to happen ever again for those cars. So they have this, there's a ghost inside, and that's, you know, that's kind of sad. But for me, you know, just brutalized and just cars that are brutal and certainly look the part and are used for the part. I love them, you know. And so rat rods, the description to me is not negative by any stretch.
No, me neither.
I think it's a downer, but I like it. And they're fantastic. And sometimes, yeah, they're an excuse for, you know, I only have a Pinto 4 banger and a Ranger, a Ford Ranger frame and a fiberglass body. I'm going to make them work. That's what hot rodding is, making something from nothing, you know.
Yeah.
So I got no problem with them. You know, they're cool.
And speaking of donuts, no one's going to ever eat a donut in that car again, which is also a shame, you know, like to pull to a Dunkin' Donuts once in a while. Yeah. You know, you remind me of our friend Scotty Gosson. We talked about his show rod model book that just before you came on. He started with a Model A cowl, just a cowl, and now they're building a chassis from scratch, him and Doc Lockjaw, and he's going to put a Ford Ranger 4-banger in it with a 5-speed and drive this thing across the country.
Yeah. The good engines, the 2.3 or the 2.5, get plenty of potential. You know, they're strong motors with a turbocharger. My God, they can shame a V8 without any problems.
Yeah.
But
speaking of the small stuff, you just told me you were working on a Slant 6. Is that correct?
Tell me about that. Yeah, I've got a 63 Dart. I'm waiting on a 572 crate Hemi from Chrysler. I've got sort of a contract with those guys. They're on national back order everywhere. So in the meantime, I've got a 63 Dodge Dart. It's a Dart GT. It's a California car, but it came to Massachusetts back in 1988. So it has its share of rust, a little bit, nothing structural. I can funny this car without any issues, but it has some quarter, you know, a little bit of fender rot and stuff. So it's a winter car. And I say that with a wink, and I hose it off, don't drive it in horrible weather. But anyway, it's a Slant 6 automatic push-button car, and it was getting kind of lazy and sleepy. I could tell it was tired. So I had a spare Slant 6 head, took it to my local machine shop, a place called Rad over in Palmer, Mass. Good guys. And they milled 100,000 off the deck, which sounds like suicide on any engine, but Slant motors are, they're so thick, you can cut the Slant 6 deck 100,000.
Right.
And you get 8.4 grows to 9.2-to-1 compression.
Nice.
And so with that alone, believe it or not, you can hear it in the exhaust. It barks. It's a strange thing. and just with the two barrel, or even the one barrel is what this thing still has on it. And so they did a valve job, and they used a thing called a bull hog. It's a very cheap way to get a little bit of airflow. It indicates off of the valve guide, the valve inside the head, and it's basically a cutter. They just take it, they plunge away inside of there, removing whatever's in the way, and that's it. And so basically it opens up the throat behind the valve, helps the engine to breathe better, over $3,000, you know.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I had that done. It was $300, and I just threw it back together, and I took it for a drive in the snow yesterday morning, and it spun the tires all the way up this big hill, and never could do that. I mean, of course, we're in snow.
Yeah.
But So when things get sleepy and boring, anything can be a source of fun, even a Slant 6.
Oh, absolutely. So. Now, tell me, you're going to source out one of those old cast aluminum fin valve covers for that thing?
You know, I've had those before. I get them from Clifford. They're good. But the only downside to those things, believe it or not, you have to don't just bolt it on, because in some situations it actually doesn't seal. You have to, the perimeter needs more trimming more often than not. But with that said, on this car, I won't bother. The reason is, you know, it's a thing that Slant 6, its days are numbered. Because the Hemi, whenever it arrives, that Slant 6 is going to get stuff behind the barn. But
Stick it to something else.
Why not?
Slant 6s are, I had an all-aluminum Slant 6. If you read Mopar Muscle Magazine or even a Hot Rod back 10 years ago.
That was in Hot Rod.
Yeah, I got lucky, and in fact, when I was at Hot Rod Magazine, I used to do a lot of, you know, the reader's rides and stuff like that.
It was the Junkyard column, wasn't it? The Junkyard Crawl?
That's Carcraft, years of that. Yeah,
I read them both, so I don't remember what's what anymore.
Yeah, they melt together,
But
sure
I
do.
Had a guy in Indiana. Indiana. And he calls and he says, hey, I'm here in Kokomo, Indiana, and the former plant manager for the Chrysler Kokomo, Indiana, Foundry Division. Apparently, there was an estate sale, and in the place there were two aluminum slant six cylinder heads, a couple of blocks, and some just really early prototype stuff. And yeah, right, sure. And he sent me snapshots. So sure enough, for $500, I sent the guy a check for $500, and he sent me two aluminum cylinder heads. Now, they made iron slant sixes for decades,
right,
and they never put aluminum heads on them. There were aluminum blocks for 2 years.
Steve, wasn't that part of the Hyper package, though?
Well, not really. The Hyper Pack was that long four barrel, as you might recall, and a Cadillac sourced AFB, a 430 CFM AFB, mm-hmm, and cast iron exhaust manifolds.
Oh.
But the block and the head were just your standard stuff.
Oh,
now,
okay.
It depended on what you had to start with. If you were smart and you had a 225 slant six with the aluminum, you could actually get those in A-bodies, $100-$150, I think it was, something like that,
mm-hmm,
upcharge. And then you could build your slant six around an aluminum motor if you wanted to. But anyway, so the heads came, and I said, wow, they're real. And they both had 1960 casting dates, February of 60, both
wow,
of them cast within
wow,
2 days of each other. And so I got one of them, and Doug Dutra is a big California slant six guru. So I gave him one head. I said, here, dude, you take this one. I have $500 into these things, nothing, if you'll take my head and port it and work it and send it back to me. So he did. And so what I had was probably the world's only all-aluminum slant six, and me and two other people cared about it. So that was fun.
Wow. I would love to see that in an
yeah,
early Valiant, with the
yeah,
spare tire, but as a gasser or an altered.
Yeah.
That'd be so
cool. That's what I did. In fact, it ended up in a 62 Valiant four-door, and then finally I found a 62 Valiant two-door, all white original paint, patinaed. And in the 1962, I think it was the AHRA Winter Nationals, they gave away a Valiant to the winner, and there was a picture of it in Cars Magazine. So I had an artist letter it up, awarded at 1962 AHRA Winter Nationals to the winner of Top Fuel Eliminator. And it was lettered on the side of the car.
Wow.
So I had that done in the doors just like it was. And that car appeared. It was in Hemmings' classic car. And the funny thing is, the guys at Hemmings at that time, not Hemmings Muscle Machines, those guys, they're more about V8s and laying rubber. Hemmings classic car were more about, stock vehicles. So they really played down the performance side of it. But it is one of the few feature cars in Hemmings classic car that is shown with the lead-in of doing a burnout.
Excellent.
I'm proud of that.
I'd be proud of that, too.
Tires are smoking and stuff like that.
Some old pie crust slicks or something.
I'm sure the sense.
Yeah, I get some 14-inch bias flies because there's
okay,
not a lot of wheel, but they
right,
do make fantastic gassers. They do.
Yeah.
Because that big wide, the rear opening, the wheel opening is so big, it's ready for a pie crust.
Right.
You need to radius it a bit and put a real motor in there. But
yeah,
anyway, yeah.
That's too funny. Steve, can you hang on for a quick break?
Sure.
Let's take a quick break right here with Steve Magnante, who is a Barrett Jackson correspondent, along with Speed TV's columnist for Hot Rod, Car Craft, Muscle Car Review, and writer of some fine, upstanding automotive literature. Too much to talk about right now at this very moment. We're going to take a break right here at Motor Mouth Radio, and we'll talk more with Steve. Also, you can pick up this show on iHeartRadio and Performance Motorsports Network. That's Ray Guarino behind the shop bench. I'm Chris Switzer. Keep it where you got it. More Steve Maggs.
Got a car question? Give the Motor Mouths a call at 516-572-7440.
WHBC Garden City, New York. The voice of Nassau Community College.
Join WHPC's Daily News Wrap-Up, weekdays at 4:30 p.m., bringing you a complete report of the day's news home and abroad, as well as sports, weather, and many other informative features.
We're Long Island's FM alternative.
Help you with all your car questions at 516-572-7440.
All righty. We're back with Steve Magnante on the phone with us here at Motor Mouth Radio. Ray Guarino. I'm Chris Switzer. And when we last left off, Ray was ready to ask a question.
Oh, I have a list burning a hole in my bench here.
That's what I figured. Throw it right to Ray.
Thank you. Steve, coming off the auction again, we'll throw it back to there. What kind of did you see any new or altering trends emerging that you've seen? I know a lot of these cars are stock restores and they're perfect, but there are a couple of resto mods. Is there anything changing in the climate that you've picked up on?
Well, it seems, first off, Ron Pratt, as you may know, sort of the Marlboro man, he's this guy who, for about the last 6 years, he just sits there quietly with a little smile on his face. He buys whatever he wants. Well, he sold 105 vehicles, and he did $35.5 million selling much of his collection back to the collector marketplace.
Wow,
and was a smiling guy, and all of Tuesday was dedicated to his collection getting sold.
Mm-hmm.
People are thinking, oh man, it's going to be horrible. People know what he paid for these because they saw him buy them. He's going to take a bath. It's going to be bad for the market.
No.
Didn't happen. He made money.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think one of your contemporaries had said that, it's well known that Ron buys only the best of the best, and then if he has to, he makes it even better if need be, and then when he sells it, it's known to be. Some of his cars sold for double what he paid for them.
They sure did.
Yeah.
And it speaks to, some guys were saying, people read a lot into things, and quite often there's no point to it. The facts are what you see after they've happened more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
And, Ron made his millions, if not billions, in Las Vegas selling his companies, house building companies, right before it imploded. Right?
Yeah.
So he said, well, he's doing it again. Here we go again. We're about to crash. Stop it, I say. He's just a guy selling his cars.
Right, right.
So beyond all of that, I think what's going on is we're seeing the increasing value, which is good and bad. It's good. It's more good than bad, because I'll tell you this. When I went to L.A. in 1992 to begin working at the magazine business, older cars were called clunkers. Remember that?
Sure.
Car campaigns, clunkers. The New York Times is doing front page stories about how they're alternatives to the stock market. So that's a good thing. Let's not crush them, obviously, But anyway. But it does seem that the values are really strong, and people are paying good money for good cars. And beyond that, the resto mod, the modified vehicle, I never thought I'd see the day that a fuel-injected Corvette, like a 62 or even a 58.9, would be begging for $70,000, while a radically modified car with an LS1 and independent rear suspension and stuff would be going easily for $120,000.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So here we are. People want to drive them, and I think so that's a good thing. Whether these guys, who's going to, in the long run, which car is going to be a better shot at getting your money back on? Well, I don't know, but I'm going to guess the original restored, but maybe not, because these cars that are modified are generally fresh out of the chute. They're brand new constructions, and they haven't been really driven or ridden, and they're not somebody's, used car. They're new. So I don't know how that's going to play 5, 10, 20 years down the road. Will these things still be commodities, or will they just be like old hot rods? I don't know.
Well,
and speaking of old hot rods, those are strong too. They're not in the $100,000 range, but it seems like almost anything that was rolled across that block sold for reasonable money. If not, better than you'd think. But it is true that a lot of the cars, you can't build them for this. We keep saying that, but in many cases.
I was going to say, they sold for reasonably a lot more than I have to spend.
Yeah. Well, keep in mind, too, the one thing about Barrett Jackson is when you watch that show, you're only seeing probably 50, 40% of what's being sold, because it would be, monumentally more expensive to run all of the entire auction. So when we go on the air at lot number 202, 202 vehicles have passed before.
Right.
And so you get $5,000 sales, you get $2,000 sales early in the show.
But they're not gonna make
that does happen.
Right.
So don't count yourself out. Do go and look at the docket. Sometimes in the docket you'll find gems. Go get them. You can snap them up. It happens.
Nice.
It does happen.
Steve, what do you think when you talk about the way it's monetarily going with classic cars and muscle cars? Is it because there's really no room to restore cars that are 20 years old and newer? Like it's got to be tougher to do something like that. So it's still the responsibility and the money still falls on the older cars, which keeps it alive, right?
Well, to that point, it seems to me this is a wave that's going to keep coming. It's like a bulldozer. It's rolling along. Whatever is under the blade is going to be involved. And I'm seeing strong interest in disco-era Trans Ams.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I've always talked about those.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 5-liter Mustangs.
Yep.
The
Cobra. Yeah, the Cobra R's and stuff. They're coming on strong. And IROCs, believe it or not.
How about those 2.2 Shelbys, the Shelby Chargers from the early 80s?
Yeah, I think anything that was once drool-worthy, even something as laughable, I hate to say it, as a front-wheel drive, L-body, which is kind of, little Charger dudes, but they had a vibe about them. And if that tickles somebody's memory, they're going to pay money to enjoy and appreciate. They're not going to be million-dollar cars, but they will certainly be worth trading in, and there will be guys who will say, hey, I can flip this and make money with it, and there'll be somebody happy. Yeah, I want that car because it reminds me of when I was 20 and I couldn't afford one. I wanted one. And, the IROCs and, of course, the LS Camaro. Sparrows and Firebirds. I think the Firebirds have yet to, the 2001-ish, before they eliminated the cars, I think those cars have yet to sort of come on, but the 1LE Camaros. And the thing is, though, with those, right, there's not a lot of restoration parts available for them because much of that stuff isn't so old that it's hard to find. So what seems to sell well right now is survivors that have just low miles on them. They bring serious money. So restoring those things, I think another 10 or 20 years from now, yes, there will be people doing as serious a restoration on a 98 LS1 Camaro as there will people doing on 69 L89 Camaros.
I have to say, Steve, being a Pontiac guy, I learned something from you watching the auction where you pointed out numerous times how the 400-equipped 68-69 Firebirds came with the Pontiac Spear on the front bumper.
Yeah.
And I wasn't aware of that. So, everybody can learn something by watching you.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's a funny thing. I didn't believe it at first, and I started saying, hey, is this true? Because I looked back at magazine road tests, and sure enough, only the 400s had the little spear. And I'm like, wow, what a subtle way to, identify the big engine. Of course, they had the 400s on the fenders and or hood, depending. But there it is, that little rubber spear on the 400.
Actually, I guess I'm going to be technically correct. It's an Arrowhead, being that it's a Pontiac.
Yes.
Yeah, but we know what we're talking about. Yeah, that's cool. So, and again, I picked up, you dissed a couple of smaller things in a very nice way. It was actually a flex hose that I was like, yes, burn that stupid flexi hose, that damn thing.
Some of the components on the car, Steve didn't find attractive.
And it was one of those chromed ones, one of the nice ones that everybody uses that I have no love for. I'd rather just give me a rubber hose. You know what? Not a rubber flex hose, a rubber molded hose. It works.
Steve, what pisses you off about some ways people do restorations on cars?
I heard Chip Foose one time. It was either him or Troy Trepanier saying that they do their best to design the ugly out of a car. Right? There's a thing called black metal. Black metal in Detroit. That's the stuff that you don't see, like the underside. Black metal is important. Frames. We need that stuff. I love it. I respect it. When I see, factory contours on the lower part of the firewall, I say that's precious metal. Let it be. But some guys can't let anything be. Everything has to fall under their spell. I say, well, go get a ball of wax and build your own car. What are you wasting your time on a vehicle for? You have better things to do. Be a sculptor.
Like Boyd Coddington did.
Well, he sure did. He really did. Yeah. I mean, he reimagined a car, and truly nothing from the original car would be left, so I get that. But if you can't go all the way with it, just realize your limitations. So anyway, one thing that drives me nuts is people who like that fake braided hose they put over the actual rubber hose. And the fake AN fittings with, you can see the screw.
Oh man.
I know. That's for people who are visitors to the world of cars, school, when you don't have anything, you want to get dress it up. That kind of dress up stuff drives me insane, but that's just me.
That's one of the things, Steve. Chris and I, in the past, we've done a lot of car show judging as part of, because we're radio celebrities and we know what we're talking. But Chris and I always wanted to, we walk by the cars and we pick out the real ugly stuff. Like, we want to give like the worst of the worst awards. The guy that has the model of his car on the chrome circulating cover on the air cleaner. Like, give me. I'd love to. I want to melt it. I want to bring a propane torch and just light the damn thing on fire.
The guy that sprays everything with a spray bomb, just sprays everything blue.
Or the pink. He has the whole engine compartment filled with pink wire wrap.
Christ.
But at the same time, I do realize that, I'm not out to hurt anybody's feelings by any stretch. That's the sad. When that happens, people get all angry, and it's just it's never good. But, there's a seat for every seat, as they say, but a seat, And so, as a result, everybody, we're free to do what we want. It just doesn't mean I have to like it. But I've learned to keep my mouth shut. When I was at Hot Rod Magazine, I did something I regret. I did a roundup of gassers, right? And every one of the cars was close, but not perfect, because I didn't select them. The project was handed to me, and so as a result, they were selected by a guy who wasn't really that hip with retro and stuff. So we got a lot of these weird cars with mixed metaphors and stuff. So for each car, I gave a little Siskel and Ebert style thumbs up, thumbs down.
Nice.
What's great? Yeah, what's great and what greats?
Yeah,
cool
things. And these guys were heartbroken because in the national stage of Hot Rod magazine, I pooped on their cars, you know.
Right.
And it was sad. I really saw that. I said, oh, man, I felt bad. So it kind of taught me a lesson, you know, and there I am, just a sniper. I'm just a sniper as a writer. I'm not a guy who really has an investment. So here I am taking advantage of my position, crapping on these guys' cars. I'll never do that again. So anyway, I understand there's a seat for every seat, but all the same, sometimes you got a little bit of religion goes a long way. Just kind of tell and show people by example, hey, this is not a good thing. And maybe they'll take the bait, maybe they won't. But there's a seat for every seat. I've learned that. I've just kind of learned to keep my mouth shut when I don't like things.
That's true. That's what makes this hobby great and this sport great.
Yes. I have to say, speaking about the crapper, I was just in the reading room this morning looking at my current copy of Hot Rod magazine, and there's a car in there called the Orange Crate. It's a 55 Chevy Gasser.
Yep.
Fashioned after the old gases. The guy, the story was he wanted to do it for a long time, and his son helped him because he learned body skills. But Orange Crate after the Schwinn bicycle. Mm-hmm. And he actually has a Schwinn contour. The console looks like it's the banana
seat. I've seen this.
And it's a beautifully done car. It's fantastic. And I don't even know who wrote the article, but the author did write that at the end, he says, you know, it's not a, if you had to judge this car on gasser correctness, it would fall short of the mark. But the way they blended the two styles of the era, like, you know, pop culture, like, you know, Schwinn bicycles and gassers, it was a hit. And I have to agree. I like the way that they did that. It was, you know, like you said, from purity, he wouldn't win. But I think the car was aces and hit it out of the park.
I was reading that this morning myself. I had the same issue with the Hoonigan Mustang, I think, on the cover there.
Yes.
Sure.
Yes.
And I guess the Hot Rod has come around. I mean, when I was there, it was suffering to some degree. I mean, every administration that winds up in the seat at Hot Rod says the one before was blowing it, and we're going to save it. You know, we didn't save it. But, you know, we did our best, and what can you do? Roman Gonig was the boss at the time.
Right.
I think he was a Long Island guy myself. Was from there. Good guy. He's still down in Florida now, a friend of mine to this day. But he was the editor, and he said there was a sense at Hot Rod that was kind of getting kind of archaic and just too much blister pack Hot Rod and too much Chevrolet, to be honest. No AMC, no Mopar, no Pontiac, no Oldsmobile.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, let's get these new guys in, Terry McGee and Jeff Koch, me.
Right.
And there was Gray, of course.
Yeah.
You know, Gray was there just sort of as the spark plug for all of it. But we did our best. I introduced a junkyard aesthetic best I could.
Right.
Because to me, I was in California from Massachusetts, saw too much rust-free metal getting crushed and unappreciated. I said, guys, get out here now. And so I think it helped a bit, I think, to shed a light on saving stuff from the junkyard. But at the same time, I look at Hot Rod right now and I said, my God, the effort that goes into making that magazine, all the columns, the small bits, it was probably three times what we had to put out, and we thought we were hauling butt, you know?
And actually,
so I look at Hot Rod now, it's really an eye-opening thing. And Dave Freiberger, I don't know if he's the editor.
Oh, yeah.
Chief.
Sure.
And just, he's a turbine, a spark plug, a cyclotron of effort. And he will work 25-hour days. That's a blessing and a curse because, you know, he gets paid for 25-hour days. But anyway, with that said, he's probably the guy who read that and put that piece in the end about how the car needs a little knock just for not being a pure gasser. He is a very strict critic, if you will, and I bet that's from him. But anyway, just a sidetrack. But Hot Rod has just, they're great because they've been sort of, you know, all magazines, as you know, it's a shrinking industry. And they were, you know, on the rocks, Hot Rod, of all things, had a shrinking viewership or readership, and they're doing all right.
I was going to say, now, before we take a break, my closing thought on that was David Kennedy is now at the helm over there, and I know that he's from Boston, so it's another East Coast guy running the ship over there, which is great. So, you know, people check it out. I also read CarCraft. We like that, too, and Hot Rod Deluxe, don't forget their website.
Steve, can we help keep you on for another break?
Happy to do it, sure.
All righty, hold on one sec. Steve Magante is here with us, Barrett Jackson and Speed TV correspondent, along with a Hot Rod Car Craft Muscle Car Review columnist and a writer of some fine literature. Steve Magante still with us here, still holding his own with the Motor Mouths here at Motor Mouth Radio and also the Motor Mouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour. If you're suffering from a drip on your car, some sort of drip, some sort of life-sapping moisture that's just making you crazy, you're part of the Motor Mouth Radio Honor Group of the Hour. Keep it where you got it. More Steve Maggs coming your way.
The Motor Mouths will be right back with your car questions. Give us a call at 516-572-7440.
WHPC Garden City, New York, the voice of Nassau Community College.
Listen. Join WHPC's Daily News Wrap-Up, weekdays at 4:30 p.m., bringing you a complete report of the day's news, home and abroad, as well as sports, weather, and many other informative features.
Boston's FM alternative.
Let the Motor Mouths help you with all of your car questions at 516-572-7440.
All righty, welcome back to Motor Mouth Radio. We're on the phone with Steve Magante, Barrett Jackson correspondent, along with Speed TV, writer, columnist, all kinds of
good
stuff.
Actually, it's Velocity.
Velocity?
Yes, Speed is no
did
longer.
Did I say Speed?
Yes, you did.
Sorry.
It's Velocity TV.
I have to get up on my my networks.
You in the TV business.
Well, I think I'm in the TV business. You think I look at networks?
No.
I think I look at television.
Steve,
I like radio.
Steve, can people still, is the funnycarfarm.com still in operation? I haven't checked that in a while.
It is. You know, the funny thing is, a friend of mine is in California, Dale Snoke and Mike Morgan, and they sort of shepherd it, but they have lives and stuff, so it's still there. And I get orders once in a while for the Funny Car book and the DVDs and stuff like that, but it's still there. Yes, thefunnycarfarm.com.
And I wanted to mention your DVDs, the How to Build Your Own Altered Wheelbase Funny Car.
Fantastic.
And Match Bass Madness, which were also both of them, your own car, your own Nova, which do you still own that car? I know it was up for sale a while ago.
You know, I did sell it. I put it on eBay, and it went away to a loving couple in, I think, Illinois, and they're happy to own it. And it's a thing where I still have my Rampage and a Fairmont, but it came to a thing where I drove that car, the Nova, the Wilshire Shaker, twice in the last 20 months.
Okay.
And I said, you know, how many cars do I need? So so I took care of some debts and, you know, basically let it set it free. And the owner, he's happy. He's got a Mopar altered wheelbase car. He may bring that car out with a touring funny car show, like a Match Batch kind of a show, which is something I wanted to do, but just never really had the time to do. So I don't own it anymore. No, the Wilshire Shaker is free, but anyway.
So you're using the money to fund any future projects?
Like the Fairmont?
Actually, indeed. Yeah, to that point, absolutely. Yeah. The Fairmont, I was in the garage the other night with that, and what I did, see, Fox Body Mustangs, we love them, the 5 liters and stuff, but the Fairmont is basically the same thing on a slightly different body, obviously, but the same chassis. The only downside is when you increase ride heights on those cars with independent, control arm and coil spring rear suspension, you often get wheel hop. Mm-hmm. The 5 liter Mustangs are very good drag cars, but they're generally lowered. When you raise the ride height, which is what I do with the gassers, you get this strange thing where you get this massive wheel hop. So I put Mopar Superstock Leaf Springs, and they fit right in the car.
Oh, nice.
Strange, but true. So anyway, so that's the latest project, putting Mopar springs in it. And this spring, it'll be running and driving with a Hillborn injected 4.6 Mach 1 crate motor in it. So anyway,
I forget if it was on the Match Bash DVD or the altered DVD. You actually, when you bought that car with the stock engine, you had done the body mods and you were driving it through one of the drive-thrus. Yeah, I think it was in, was that in California? It was fantastic. It's funny as hell to see
that. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, the little gray. The trouble was, I built that car in California where emissions and smog laws on anything built after 1975 are a whole different thing.
Yeah.
Here, we're pretty lucky. But out there, if you got a car after 75, you go through smog twice every 2 years.
Yeah.
And if you put a Camaro in your Fairmont or even anything on your 5-liter Mustang or your Z28 from the 80s, you have some explaining to do if it's not CARB approved. So so I kept the six-banger in that car, a 200 cubic inch six. We had 98 horsepower, and so it looked like a funny car, kind of. But I used to drive it around with the six popper. But here in Massachusetts, it now has a 4.6 camera, 5-speed, a TKO transmission, and I put the six banger on eBay for $1, and it sold for 99 cents.
Nice.
So a guy came and got it. I made it pay me in pennies, so at least I felt like I got something.
Oh, good. And speaking of the cars, I noticed I was watching the auction last night from last Saturday. It was a replay again, and it did my heart good to see the the 2-lane blocktop car come up, the 55 Chevy, sold for $145,000, and ironically, a little while later, a 69 Judge sold for $165,000. So at least those cars are still bringing some money. I'm glad to see that.
Yes, and that 2-lane blacktop car was the real thing.
Yeah.
Not a tribute. That was the real deal. It was cool. That was a neat piece. The guy was he was hoping for 200, believe it or not.
Oh, okay.
140 was good. If you ask me, I think that's a strong number. You know, considering that the sum of its parts, its history was the thing. The sum of its parts, you could duplicate that car for $20,000.
But anyway,
a neat thing. Yeah,
actually, one of the things that I tell my wife about, I have this, sometimes I get stage fright around certain guests, and thank you for making it very easy to deal with you because you're a very personable guy. But I have Richard Root's phone number sitting on my computer, and I have not called it yet in 2 years. He was one of the guys who actually built the cars.
Wow.
And I got to get in touch with him. I have to just do it and see if we can get him on the show.
How do you think, Steve? How do you deal with the big guns? How do we get Ray's confidence built up a little bit here?
Well, it's just jump in there and do it. You know, I find that everybody in the end, we only have 2 feet. We just, we're people. You know what I mean? And pretty much everybody is very, if you just, you know, don't insult people, don't make them mad. There's some people, I have to say, you know, I do love, well, Richard Rawlings. Probably his somewhat controversial character.
Fast and Loud.
I appreciate his show, Fast and Loud. And now that, one thing is, you know, that Barrett Jackson, we have gone from Speed to Fox Sports. And that's the old days. It's now we're on Velocity, which is a subsidiary of Discovery Channel. So the good news is, last year, if you tried to watch the auction, Fox Sports made people bounce between 4 different channels. Remember Fox Sports 1,
yes.
Fox Sports 2, Nat Geo, and even there was Fox Business, you know?
Right.
So the thing was, it was a shrewd idea. They would, if you didn't have those channels, if you want to see the whole show, they'll force you to up buy. Well, okay, I get it. But anyway, in the end, that didn't work. So Craig Jackson set them free, and now we're on Velocity, which is owned by Discovery.
Right.
Okay, my first exposure to Richard Rawlings, and you might, if you hear this, I'm not going to libel him, but I was on stage 5 years ago, and I walked up just humbly, "Rich, I love your show." He looked at me like I was a piece of dust, you know, just walked away.
Huh.
But with that said, he's
nice.
He's an interesting cat, you know. But get him on your show sometime. But don't be put off if he pisses you off the first time. He's actually a good guy.
Okay, we'll look into that.
Yeah. So, but arm yourself well. He's an interesting guy. He's got a lot of things going at the same time. But if you can, try to get a hold of him. Sure. He's a good interview, you know, for about 5 minutes.
Right,
Steve. What we like to do here on the show, sometimes we do it to the people that we really truly enjoy and the people that we really feel comfortable with. We like to ask them for a promo, and we ask them on the air. Literally on the air. Like, we don't, like, take them aside or sequester them or anything like that. Because you always want the full vibe of whatever happens. Would you be able to provide us with a promo for Motor Mouth Radio at all?
Absolutely. Sure,
So I'll just stand back and just let you go. We'll just be quiet and let you go.
All right, here we go. And 3, 2.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, Motor Mouth Radio on 90.3 WHPC FM, where it's the real deal every time.
Awesome!
Thank you, Steve. So, Steve, we're at the end of the show. So, if you have any contact information you'd like to give out, how people can find your stuff, I'm gonna shout out Kartech Books again. Go to kartechbooks.com to buy all of Steve's great works. He's a fantastic author and knowledgeable. But if you have any information you'd like to share, please give it out now.
Sure. Well, keep in mind that Barnes & Noble does carry my books, which is kind of interesting,
awesome.
Especially the 1001. They do that. The funny car book they had for about, I think, they didn't take it. That's right. I did another book called Rusted Muscle, which is about junkyard finds. They did have that. The funny car book was never picked up. But anyway, with that said, if you go to stevemags.com, I do have a website that will walk you through my various lives and stuff. So stevemags.com or thefunnycarfarm.com.
Excellent. Good.
Very cool.
Because people want to know about you, so we'll get that out. Excellent. Well, Steve, I want to thank you very much for coming on with us. I know you had a busy time, and you're still probably decompressing from that 41-hour work week, which would have buried me. But, we'll keep in touch with you. We look forward to having you on again back in the future.
All right, Chris and Ray and Chris, I appreciate what you guys do. And again, there's lots of different kinds of car people in the world, and you guys are very genuine. You make anything I say, you guys know what I'm talking about. So you're the real, real thing. And it's cool. It's cool. And you've been at this for a long time, so you're pros. You don't need me to tell you that. So
thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
Hey, and pet the cats for me, okay, please?
Right. We'll do. All right, I'll scrub the cats.
All right, buddy, thanks.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Steve Agnate, the correspondent from Barrett Jackson, and of course, on Velocity as well. The columnist of Hot Rod, Car Craft, Muscle Car Review, and writers of... I wanted to talk to him about that, the rusted muscle.
If we had
another hour, I would have totally wanted to jump in on that. All kinds of great pictures of cars that are in some sort of decomposition that you would just want to just save.
That was my favorite part of the magazine when Steve was doing it, where he'd go out and do the junkyard cars, and he'd be looking at junk and rusted stuff, and he's calling out like engine numbers and VINs and stuff, and like, yeah, this is a diamond in the rough, you know.
I remember those columns,
and he always postulate on, wow, could this have been a 440 car? Could this have been a Hemi car? No, it's a C code, not a J code, or whatever, you know. And it just his expertise shone through all the time, and that was
very true.
I always liked it.